Welcome to today's reading of the San Angelo Standard Times, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Michael. I am reading the San Angelo Standard Times for the week of Sunday, July 18th, 2021. I'm narrating on Thursday, July 22nd, and I'll begin with the most recent articles. COVID-19 update, a look at San Angelo coronavirus data for July, published July 22nd. Tom Green County, City of San Angelo, 17,289 positive cases reported, 56 new positive cases, deaths 317, 202 from Tom Green County and 115 from other counties, 19 currently hospitalized, 264 active cases. Tom Green County COVID-19 Vaccine Tracker. Tom Green County has administered more than 81,425 doses of the COVID-19 vaccine as of July 20th, according to data from the Texas Department of State Health Services. That's up very slightly by 0.9% from the previous week's tally of 80,698 COVID-19 doses administered. In Tom Green County, 34% of people living in Tom Green County are fully vaccinated as of July 20th. No more textbooks? San Angelo ISD students to receive iPads. Here's who gets them first. By John Tufts, published July 22nd. Student backpacks at San Angelo ISD could soon become much lighter after the district announced Monday it would transition to digital textbooks stored on iPad devices. During a school board meeting Monday, July 19th, Assistant Superintendent Jana Reuter gave a presentation about the district's iPad initiative, a plan to get the Apple devices into the hands of students, faculty, and administrators. Reuter said the technology rollout would begin as early as next week. Teachers at both Lakeview and Central High School will receive an iPad, Apple TV, and Logitech Crayon on July 23rd and 29th and 30th. Middle school teachers at SAISD will receive the same devices in September. Faculty will receive training from Apple coaches in August, as well as on a monthly basis. The goal, of course, is to get an iPad into the hands of all of our San Angelo ISD students over the course of the next school year, up into the beginning of the 2022-23 school year, Reuter said. There are more than 14,500 students who attend SAISD, according to the district's official website. The Standard Times requested more information Monday evening about the district's iPad initiative, including how many devices the district purchased, their cost, and whether funding came from additional state resources. As of 2:30 p.m. Thursday, officials with SAISD were unable to provide that information to the Standard Times. A spokesperson for the district noted administrators have been undergoing internal training and that more information about the program would be provided at a later date. On Monday, Reuter said all high school students attending SAISD will receive an Apple iPad in August before the start of fall classes. Middle school students are scheduled to receive iPad devices beginning January 2022. Reuter said the district was spreading the rollout of devices throughout the year to ensure SAISD could support the initiative. Based on how well the transition goes for high school and middle school campuses, Reuter said elementary students and teachers will receive iPad devices tentatively scheduled in the spring and fall of 2022. One goal of the program, Reuter said, is for teachers to design lesson plans on their faculty iPad, which will then be delivered to the students' iPad as they sit down for class. Texas textbooks going digital. Reuter said the district eventually plans to phase out physical copies of textbooks for digital versions that can be downloaded onto each student's iPad. Digital copies of secondary textbooks were purchased for the 2021-22 school year, according to Reuter, but classroom sets will still be available as SAISD continues to transition to electronic devices over the next year. Officials at SAISD were unable to provide information on how much the district spent to obtain digital copies of textbooks as of 2:30 p.m. Thursday. School Board President Max Parker welcomed the initiative and praised the efforts of administrators for getting technology into the hands of every student at SAISD. Superintendent Carl Dethloff also praised the initiative, saying the devices would transform classrooms into innovative learning spaces. Angelo State baseball player indicted in fatal crash, by Elena Edgen, published July 22nd. An Angelo State University baseball player has become the second person indicted in connection to a March crash that killed three children, according to court documents released Thursday. A four-page indictment charged Benjamin Elder, 24, with three counts of accident involving death. These charges are second-degree felonies, punishable by up to 20 years in jail and a fine not to exceed $10,000. A court date has not been set as of noon Thursday, according to online court records. Antonio Jose Gonzalez, 17, was the first person indicted in June. The five-page indictment charged him with three counts each of evading arrest causing death and manslaughter. These are all second-degree felonies punishable by up to 20 years in jail and a fine not to exceed $10,000. A court date has been tentatively set for Gonzalez in August. He remained in Tom Green County Detention Center in lieu of a $150,000 bond as of noon Wednesday, according to online court records. Arizona man dies in rollover crash near Junction. Four injured include two infants. By Elena Edgen, published July 22nd. An Arizona man died and four Arizona people were injured in a rollover crash near Junction Wednesday morning, according to a news release from the Texas Department of Public Safety. About 10:35 a.m. Wednesday, July 21st, a 2015 Chrysler 200 drove east on Interstate 10. The driver, Tierra Monique Vigil, 18 of Phoenix, swerved the Chrysler to the right for an unknown reason, according to the release. The Chrysler went into a left side skid toward the roadway's shoulder, then left the road and rolled several times. It stopped upright, facing northwest. Vigil, who was not wearing a seatbelt, was pronounced dead by Justice of the Peace Joshua Cantrell. Another passenger, a 19-year-old from Mesa, also was not wearing a seatbelt and was transported to Kimball County Hospital with non-incapacitating injuries, according to the release. Three passengers, a 2-year-old and 3-month-old from Mesa and a 3-week-old from Phoenix, were also taken to Kimball County Hospital with non-incapacitating injuries. The three children were improperly secured in child passenger safety seats, according to the release. The report listed the conditions as clear, cloudy skies, and the road was dry. Two men indicted in the 2008 San Angelo death of Jordan Holden. Here's what we know. By Elena Edgen, published July 22nd. Two men have been indicted over a decade after a San Angelo man was shot to death in 2008, according to court documents released Wednesday. Two indictments charged Patrick Joseph Stewart Jr., 32 of San Antonio, and Raymond Andrew Lee Rice, 32 of Allen, with murder connected to the shooting death of Jordan Holden, 22. The charges are first-degree felonies, punishable by 5 to 99 years in jail. Court dates have not been scheduled in either case as of 9:45 a.m. Thursday, according to online jail records. Night out ends in death of father-to-be. About 1:10 a.m. July 20th, 2008, a man on his front porch in the 2500 block of West Beauregard Avenue saw a dark-colored sedan roll past his house and park nearby. Two men left the car, and at least one put on a dark cap or ski mask-type head covering, according to the resident's testimony to police. About 12 minutes later, police arrived in the 2500 block of West Harris Avenue after the resident heard gunshots. Four friends, one of whom lived on Harris Avenue, had returned from a night out. The homeowner knew they could not enter through the front door since the key had broken off in the lock. He went through a front window and was met with two intruders, according to the affidavit. The homeowner yelled a warning to the others. Two of the friends entered through the front window. Both friends were met with gunfire, and one shot struck Jordan Holden in the abdomen, records state. The soon-to-be father died at the Shannon Medical Center emergency room. His girlfriend was 3 months pregnant at the time. The intruders fled the area, and the man on Beauregard saw them enter the sedan and drive toward Angelo State University. Clothing left at home leads to arrests over a decade later. Investigators believe the intruders entered through a back window, which had damage. The intruders also left behind a black toboggan and a black Nike shoe, records state. Officials took the clothing for DNA testing and received an indirect match from a man with a 20-year-old son at the time. In November 2016, investigators received and executed a search warrant to get a sample of the son's DNA. The DNA was over 34 quadrillion times more likely to have come from Stewart than anyone else, according to the affidavit. In 2008, Stewart had attended Angelo State University and worked at a car wash. On June 28, 2008, a man took his vehicle to the car wash and later noticed his Kel-Tec 380 had disappeared from his car. The man told police the gun was loaded and bullets matching the gun were used in the shooting. Stewart was working the day the gun went missing, records state. Investigators also reached out to known associates of Stewart, one of whom was identified as Rice. During an interview on March 12, 2021, Rice said he went to ASU in 2008 and knew Pat, according to court documents. Rice allowed investigators to take a DNA sample, and investigators compared it to a stain on a polo shirt the homeowner was wearing that night. The DNA was over 1.06 nonillion times more likely to have come from Rice than anyone else, according to the affidavit. Stewart's DNA was also on the shirt. Two separate Runnels County collisions have left one dead, three injured on Tuesday. By Bill Hancock, Runnels County Register, published July 22nd. A Ballinger man was killed and another Ballinger man was critically injured in a collision Tuesday evening at U.S. Highway 83 and County Road 344. Toby Moore of Ballinger was driving an F-250 pickup truck when he pulled out onto U.S. 83. Moore was killed when his truck was struck by Justin Busenlehner of Ballinger, also driving an F-250. Busenlehner suffered debilitating injuries and was airlifted to Parkland Hospital in Dallas. He was later reported to be in stable condition. The Ballinger Fire Department, Runnels County Sheriff's Office, Ballinger Police Department, and state troopers responded to the scene of the crash. The impact crushed in the driver's side of Moore's pickup truck as it bent and twisted the frame. The front of Busenlehner's truck was also crushed in from the impact. Moore's truck came to a rest on the side of the highway while the momentum carried Busenlehner's truck well into a cotton field. Authorities say that Busenlehner had the right-of-way. It is not known if alcohol played a role in this collision. Moore's body has been sent to Lubbock for an autopsy. The Sweetwater DPS office is leading the accident investigation. Wreck outside Winters leaves couple injured. Two Miles residents were injured in a motor vehicle accident on State Highway 153 outside of Winters on Tuesday. Rosa and Andrew Schwertner were driving on the highway when they lost control of the vehicle for an unknown reason. The vehicle left the roadway and rolled over at least once. According to Runnels County Sheriff Carl Squires, Mr. Schwertner was flown from the scene to Shannon Medical Center in San Angelo. Mrs. Schwertner was transported by EMS to North Runnels Hospital in Winters. There was talk of her being flown when another copter was available. I'm not sure if she was and have no updates on their status. The accident is being worked by Winters PD. No update has been given on the couple's condition at this time. Big Spring Police Investigating Woman's Suspicious Death. By Nathaniel Ellsworth, Abilene Reporter News, published July 21st. The Big Spring Police Department is investigating the death of a woman whose body was found early Wednesday morning, the department said in a news release. According to the release, at approximately 12:40 a.m., police and other emergency personnel responded to a report of an unresponsive female victim in the 1100 block of Lloyd Avenue, where they found the body of Maria Soto, 46. Police reported the death as suspicious, saying in the release that it appears to be a homicide, and that the department's Criminal Investigation Division and the Department of Public Safety Ranger Division are conducting an investigation. Anyone with information regarding the incident should contact Crime Stoppers at 432-263-TIPS. 8477, or submit a tip online at p3tips.com. San Angelo men arrested after entering home, pointing gun at resident over stolen items. By Elena Edgen, published July 21st. Two San Angelo men have been arrested after a resident had a rifle pointed at him during a robbery, according to an arrest affidavit released Wednesday. About 10:13 a.m. Tuesday, July 20th, police arrived to a robbery in progress in the 800 block of East 36th Street. Upon arrival, officers met with a 25-year-old man who said he and another man went to the residence to recover his property that had been taken from him, according to court documents. A resident told officers he had been in the living room when two men came in without permission through the back door. One of the two men pointed an AR-15 or AK-47 style rifle at the resident, while the other man took items, which included a television and an Xbox gaming system, according to the arrest affidavit. The resident said he owed money to the man with the gun. When the men left, the resident called police. Officers found the two men in a vehicle in front of the residence, records state. Police arrested Carrie Donnell Brown, 29, and Cameron Christopher Lewis, 25, on suspicion of aggravated robbery. Brown was also charged with three unrelated warrants. Both men remained in Tom Green County Detention Center in lieu of a $75,000 bond as of 10 a.m. Wednesday, according to online jail records. Lewis was charged in an armed assault in February, along with three other people, which involved a recent theft of property, according to prior reports. This week we have two articles from Texas A&M Extension agent Allison Watkins. Her other article we will read at the end of this program. I'll read the most recent article that was published July 21st. Tips for controlling fall army worms and fire ants in your lawn. Published July 21st. Caterpillars of all kinds have been out in abundance this year, starting with early populations of webworms. Other leaf-eating caterpillars like Sephora worm, feeding on Texas mountain laurel, and walnut caterpillars, feeding on pecans. The major nuisance right now is the fall army worm. They have emerged early and strong, which is unfortunate for some home lawns and pasture land. Army worm outbreaks are usually short-lived, but memorable when they happen. They are generally kept under control by insect and animal predators, weather conditions, and other factors. But when the conditions are just right, they can devour a lawn quickly. Watch out for army worms in the lawn and apply an insecticide as soon as possible if they appear in large numbers or significant plant damage is observed. Insecticides with low toxicity and limited impact to beneficial insects include BT spinosad and halofenoside. Conventional pesticide options include bifenthrin, carbaryl, permethrin, and esfenivalerate. Apply in the early morning or late evening for the best results. For more info on armyworm control, visit https://tomgreen.agrilife.org. www.cnangelo.org/horticulture. Fire ants are also out in high quantity, which is normal this time of year. Not only are fire ants painful to people when we accidentally come across them in the yard, they can also find their way into the home or electrical equipment and can even damage plants such as turf grass and vegetable gardens. The Texas two-step method recommended by Texas A&M includes both mound treatments and baits. Visit https://fireant.tamu.edu/control-methods/two-step for details. An insect growth regulator such as methoprene, trade name Extinguish, is a good way to control fire ants without damaging other insects, but there are many effective product options to choose from. More important than which particular product to use is proper application. Apply a bait formulation lightly and evenly throughout the entire landscape. Then use a contact mound treatment formulation directly on visible mounds. It seems like summer has just begun, but fall will be here before you know it, and we have many upcoming events to offer home gardeners in the Concho Valley. Join us on Friday, July 30th, for a workshop on peaches, planting, growing, canning, and preserving. The program will be held at the Tom Green 4-H Center from 1 p.m. to 5 p.m. and costs $30 to attend. Pre-registration is required. For info and to sign up, visit https://tomgreen.agrilife.org or call the Extension office at 325-659-6522. Other upcoming events include the Fall Landscaping Symposium hosted by the Concho Valley Master Gardeners. See txmg.org/Concho Valley to register. An Earthkind Landscape School Series from September 15th to October 13th. And a first-ever fall vegetable plant sale held by the Master Gardeners on September 25th. For updates and info on all educational opportunities, sign up for the monthly Horticulture email newsletter by calling the Extension office at 325-659-6522 or visiting https://tomgreen.agrilife.org/horticulture. Allison Watkins is the Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Agent for Horticulture in Tom Green County. Contact her at aewatkins@ag.tamu.edu. Local health experts say get vaccinated as COVID Delta variant arrives in San Angelo, by John Tufts, published July 20th. This is a developing story. More information will be provided. The Delta variant, a new mutation of the coronavirus, which is spreading quickly around the world, has made its way to San Angelo, according to a local health authority who is urging residents to get vaccinated. As early as July 9th, we've had four known UK variants in Tom Green County, and Goodfellow Air Force Base has two Delta variants, said Public Health Authority Dr. James Vredis during an interview with the Standard Times. Midland has 60 variant positives. Ector County has 54. So you know it's within our community, within the range of people are driving around, Brett Vredis said Monday, July 19th. The Delta variant was first detected in the United States in March, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, which is monitoring multiple variants of the coronavirus across the country. Health experts say the Delta variant appears to be more contagious and has become the dominant strain of the coronavirus in the world, leading to an uptick in positive cases of the virus. COVID cases in Texas. Cases of COVID-19 have climbed recently in Texas. The state's positivity rate as of last weekend was over 10%, a level that Governor Greg Abbott and the Trump administration identified as a red flag earlier in the pandemic, according to the Texas Tribune. In Tom Green County, confirmed positive cases of the virus hovered around the single digits during the first part of July. By the middle of the month, cases began to trickle higher. Health officials in Tom Green County on Tuesday, July 20th, reported 46 new positive cases of the virus. The health department on Tuesday also confirmed an additional COVID-19-related death in Tom Green County, a woman in her 50s, bringing the number of people who have died from COVID-19 to 317, 202 from Tom Green County and 115 from other counties. To slow the spread of the Delta variant, health experts are urging people to get fully vaccinated. In the United Kingdom, one shot of the Pfizer vaccine was shown to be 33% effective against Delta, but two doses were 88% effective, according to information released by Shannon Hospital. "I really think people need to get vaccinated," Vredis said. "It lowers the chance significantly of you getting sick at all, and especially of you getting severe illness requiring hospitalization or death." Vredis said, while getting fully vaccinated doesn't guarantee immunity from the virus, it can lessen the symptoms of COVID. "You're probably not going to get real sick, but you can still spread the disease," Vredis said, noting more than 60% of Tom Green County residents haven't been fully vaccinated for COVID. Tom Green County has administered more than 81,361 doses of the COVID-19 vaccine as of July 19th, according to data from the Texas Department of State Health Services, with about 39.79% of people living in Tom Green County fully vaccinated. From March 29th through April 4th, state data showed health officials administered 5,846 doses of the vaccine in Tom Green County. Last week, the number of vaccines administered diminished to 638 doses, its lowest weekly total since the end of December 2020. "It's really sad that the number of people getting vaccinated has dropped off," Vredis said. "I've seen some really sick COVID patients in the last week in the ER, and I worry we're going to have COVID units open again." For more information on where to get a COVID-19 vaccine, visit vaccines.gov/search or call 1-800-232-0233. Peasant Village chef Jason Helfer featured in Texas Living Magazine by Rosanna Frere, published July 20th. A longtime San Angelo chef was recently featured in Texas Living Magazine. Jason Helfer, chef and owner of Peasant Village, had his story told in the July-August-September 2021 edition of the Lifestyle Magazine based in College Station. Helfer's restaurant was shuttered for over a year after a vehicle crash damaged his building. It reopened December 8, 2020. "They talked about the reopening, which was one of the major factors for that business," Helfer said. "They discussed the new look and remodel and what I'm doing differently and how I reacted to all of it." In the article written by Becca Nelson Sankey, Helfer also discussed how he first got into the business, saying he wanted to be a chef since he was 5 years old. Helfer also thanked San Angelo for being loyal to him and his business during troubling times. "I can't thank San Angelo enough for their support and dedication to Peasant Village," he told the Standard Times. "I'm humbled to be in this magazine. It's a beautiful thing that San Angelo has always been on the map. We're going to stick to our guns and offer our full line of fillets and ribeyes," he said. "A lot of places aren't really selling them anymore." One of the specials is Tomahawk Tuesdays, with an up to 3-pound ribeye, two side salads, two glasses of wine, and dessert for $80. "We already started that and had a great response," Helfer said. "We're going to be working on a few more things to get you a little more for your buck. Money is tight for everyone right now, but I can go ahead and relieve a little pressure on that." To read the full article, you can visit the restaurant's Facebook page or go in store to see the magazine in person. San Angelo man arrested after firing three shots into woman's vehicle. by Elena Edgen, published July 19th. A San Angelo man has been arrested after a woman drove away from an argument and had three bullets fired into her vehicle, according to court documents. About 5:30 p.m., Saturday, July 17th, a Tom Green County Sheriff's deputy responded to an address on Presser Street. They met with a woman who reported that she left a residence on Martin Road when someone started shooting at her vehicle, records state. Deputies noted three bullet holes in the woman's car, two of which were in the rear window, while the other one punctured the vehicle's fuel tank. The vehicle also had a trailer attached, which belonged to the man, according to court documents. The man told deputies he and the woman had been having an argument at their residence. She drove away with the trailer still attached, so he pointed his Taurus 9mm semi-automatic gun at her vehicle and fired 5 to 6 rounds in an attempt to deflate the trailer's tires, according to his statement to deputies. Investigators found 6 bullet casings at the scene. James Edward Pittman II, 50, was arrested Saturday on suspicion of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. He was released the next day on a $30,000 bond, according to online jail records. Art vandalized in downtown San Angelo over the weekend. By Elena Edgen, published July 19th. One of San Angelo's fiberglass sheep was destroyed while a painting was ripped from the downtown art scene over the weekend, according to officials. Del Velasquez, executive director of Downtown San Angelo Incorporated, received a call about the damaged sheep near his office Sunday morning, July 18th. When he arrived, he saw the Sheer Ingen U Itty sheep on its side at 30 West Concho Avenue. That sheep was bought and donated to Downtown San Angelo by former Mayor J.W. Lawn and designed by artist Scott Sustek, Velasquez said. It will not be able to be repaired. The sheep had been in that location since 2012. Velasquez and Sustek moved it into the former Wendland Manufacturer building. When people decide to destroy, deface, or demolish something people worked hard for and invested money into, it's extremely disturbing, Velasquez said. It's also extremely disappointing when people disregard and disrespect artists. Along with the sheep, people also found a painting by Susan Ball nearby, which had been in Paintbrush Alley. The painting depicted an old-timey saloon and appeared damaged. This is the first time someone has removed a piece of art, said Joy Thomas, co-director of Art in Uncommon Places. We really want to focus on the local artists. They spend their time, money, and talent for San Angelo. Now we're out the plexiglass and Ball's work. Julie Raymond, co-director of Art in Uncommon Places, believed someone used a crowbar to pry the frame out and took the plexiglass, which is expensive. To have people just destroy or take art, it's just sad, Thomas said. Someone also took one of the QR codes and took it down to the Pop Art Museum. You don't know why people do what they do. Velasquez believed nearby surveillance footage may show the suspect or suspects and was working to get footage to police Monday morning. Tina Burks, public information officer for the San Angelo Police Department, said this remained an open investigation Monday morning. People who want to help Art in Uncommon Places recover from the loss can bring donations by their location at 701 South Irving Street and note that they want it to go toward Paintbrush Alley. Wake the Desert Tournament returns to Lake Nasworthy by Colin Murphy, published July 17th. After taking a year off due to COVID-19's pandemic, athletes were back competing on the waters of Lake Nasworthy as the 2021 Wake the Desert Wakeboarding Tournament kicked off Friday. The event, held near Middle Concho Park, drew dozens of audience members on Friday during preliminary runs, with much larger attendance expected Saturday and Sunday. Mark Hager, announcer for the event, said the weather was cooperating and a high level of talent scheduled to appear, the field was set for an impressive display of skills on the water. So far, we've had an awesome turnout, Hager said. The first day is filled with a lot of amateur divisions, so it's awesome to see their families out here having a good time. We have all ages and all skill levels getting out on the water and trying to have their best run. It's always fun watching everyone compete. One of the athletes ready to compete has been to Lake Nasworthy before for the Wake the Desert event and has a lot on the line in the 2021 competition. Tara Mikasic competed in 2019 at the professional level and won her event. Mikasic said she was looking forward to defending her title. I'm excited to be back, Mikasic said. I like coming here, and the site is really nice. Conditions look good. People really come out and support this event. I coach a fair bit in Florida, and I get a lot of students from Texas, so I get to see some of the families when I'm here, so that's always fun. Even though we're away from home, it feels very homey here. The Wake the Desert event was scheduled for Saturday and Sunday with competitions starting at 9 a.m. and ending at approximately 5 p.m. San Angelo man, known for waving at people from lawn, passes. Here's how to help his family. By Rosanna Frere, published July 16th. His GoFundMe says he changed the world, and he certainly left a mark on San Angelo before his death on Monday, July 12th. Miguel Angel Ramirez was most known as the smiling, waving man sitting on the corner of Summit Lane and Southwest Boulevard, wearing his straw sun hat, sunglasses, and American flag. When COVID started, he just walked out there one day and decided that's what he was going to do, said Elias Ramirez, his older brother. He loves talking to people, so if you ever got a chance to talk to him, he would talk your ears off. He was able to touch a lot of people's hearts. Miguel turned 43 on June 25th and died in Grape Creek, according to Elias. On his way back home, he got stuck somewhere in a ditch, and I guess no one stopped to help him, Elias said. He tried to push the truck out himself, and he walked 5 miles to get gas since he ran out. Investigators told me they think he sat down in his truck after pushing it, and all the force gave him a heart attack. Elias said his brother never carried a phone on him. I'm just upset because it took me 15 minutes tops to get out there when I found out, he said. I just can't really believe it. He was my only brother. It's hard when you have someone that's there with you every day, and now they're not there. He was so special to me. How to help the family of Miguel Ramirez. There are two ways to help Miguel's family, a car show benefit and a GoFundMe. Elias's friend David Castro will throw the benefit on Sunday, July 18th at Fuzzy's Taco Shop, 4333 Sherwood Way. Castro is calling all car enthusiasts to register for $20 and show off their wheels to help with the funeral costs. There will be a top 20, specialty awards, and event winner awards. My brother loves cars, so everybody in the neighborhood who had a Corvette or hot rod, he would pull them over, Elias said. Elias said his sister-in-law started the GoFundMe, One Man Can Change the World, and currently has $1,925 of donations. We just had twins a couple of weeks ago, so everything just hit us all at once, he said. She decided to start that and help us out. Salvation Army announces new leadership in San Angelo. Meet the Calderons. By Elena Edgen, published July 16th. The Salvation Army in San Angelo announced new leadership on Friday, introducing Majors Angel and Valerie Calderon, according to a news release. The Calderons previously served the past 5 years at the Pleasant Grove Community Center, where they ran Salvation Army programs. The couple originally met as youth leaders at their local Puerto Rico church, according to the release. They became Salvation Army officers and pastors in 1999 and have since served in Odessa, Plano, and several Florida cities. It has been exciting to meet the people of San Angelo and discover the many opportunities for ministry here, Angel Calderon said. We look forward to meeting the needs of this community and doing the most good alongside the staff, volunteers, and supporters of the Salvation Army. The couple will be in charge of the local programs, including the Family Store, Out of the Cold program, COVID-19 services, and church activities. United Family donates more than 9,000 rolls of toilet paper to Concho Valley Food Bank, by Rosanna Frere, published July 16th. The United Family donated 9,216 rolls of toilet paper to the Concho Valley Regional Food Bank on Monday, July 12th. This donation is part of a larger donation of more than 200,000 rolls of toilet paper to food banks across Texas and New Mexico, according to a news release from the company, which is comprised of numerous entities, including United Supermarkets. As communities across the country saw toilet paper fly off shelves last year due to COVID-19, they were reminded of how important even the most basic necessities are for everyone, the release stated. Food banks that received donations included ones in Plano, Lubbock, Amarillo, and Albuquerque. The United Family is thankful for the opportunity to provide these unique donations to the food banks that continue to do incredible work throughout the communities it serves, the release stated. Overall, the donations represented a value of approximately $90,000, according to the release. San Angelo Fireworks and Water Lily Pioneer Ken Landon Passes Away, by Elena Edgen, published July 16th. Ken Landon, who created stunning works of art both in the sky and in the water, died unexpectedly in his home Wednesday. He was 75. Landon touched the lives of many San Angelo residents with his creations at the International Water Lily Garden, 2 South Park Street, which garnered attention not only in the Concho Valley, but in publications like the Washington Post and the New York Times. He was considered an expert in water lilies, the Indiana Jones of the water lily world, and an avid collector, according to InternationalWaterLilyCollection.com. And while many residents may never have met Landon personally, they likely marveled at the pyrotechnics he designed for San Angelo's July fireworks shows. Here's what these organizations had to say. Courtney Mahaffey, executive director for the San Angelo Symphony. Ken was probably one of the kindest and most generous men I've worked with. Ken was a large part of why the July 3rd show was a huge success. He was a force, and he will be missed. It's going to be hard not having him around. Mayor Brenda Gunter. Ken Landon's passion and talents brought great joy to many citizens as well as visitors. Everyone loved the great fireworks shows that he put on for decades. His passion and knowledge of lilies brought San Angelo international attention. San Angelo was fortunate to have him in our community, and we were fortunate that he was willing to give us access to his talents. He is irreplaceable in so many ways. Finding someone to follow in his enormous footsteps is going to be very difficult. Carl White, Parks and Recreation Director. He will be deeply missed. I have known him for more than 20 years, first as a part-time employee, then as a contractor, providing the wonderful aquatics display. He was ever present at either the greenhouses at our park shop or at the collection at Civic League Park. He will be deeply missed. I'm not sure that most folks know how broad his work spanned. Not only did he provide the immaculate collection of species Nymphaea, he also provided several of the regional fireworks displays, including the annual Pops Concert and Lake Nasworthy 4th of July celebration. He also produced and sold Landon Aquatic Fertilizer, popular internationally with all who knew anything about water lilies. He also claimed to have an implement he helped design remain on the moon as part of the lunar rovers, having first mastered industrial engineering in his early years. But if folks remember him for anything, it would be for the spectacular beauty he created in the blooms of the numerous varieties of water lilies, many which he hybridized and created himself. To Today, someone suggested it seemed odd that someone would create both water lilies and fireworks. I responded, "It makes perfect sense to me. He used his knowledge of chemistry to create beauty, both in the sky and in the water. He will deeply be missed." The International Water Lily and Water Gardening Society group posted on social media, "It's with great sadness we learn today that Ken Landon has passed away." Discover San Angelo posted on Facebook, "We are saddened about the passing of our friend, Ken Landon. His collection at the International Water Lily Collection is the best in the world. He will be greatly missed. Rest in peace, Ken," said on Facebook. This is a developing story. Check back frequently for updates. And now, here is the column by Michael Price, special to the San Angelo Standard Times. Mississippi Kites, a Graceful and Valiant Raptor of the Edwards Plateau. Published July 18th. The vast majority of my memories as a budding young naturalist in the southern panhandle revolve around the summer months when I spent countless hours in the field observing wildlife when it was at the apex of its activity. I fondly recall an avian species of raptor that can not only be described as graceful, but can also be defined by its valiant behavior. Where and when you can find them. The Mississippi kite is a moderately sized species of raptor whose natural summer range includes the majority of the southeastern United States, including the entire panhandle, upper Trans-Pecos, and upper Edwards Plateau ecoregions of Texas. It can be defined as a true tropical species as it resides in southern Mexico during the cold winter months. Typically, this migratory bird is one of the last species to arrive in late spring, often not appearing in Texas until mid-May or even later. What they look like. Adult Mississippi kites can typically be described as having an overall gray hue to its entire body, including the head and neck. The underparts are the lightest, while the upper parts are considerably darker. The tail, which is solid black, is by far the darkest section of this variety. The bill is dark, and the large eyes, which are outlined in black, are deep red in coloration. The feet and legs range in coloration from yellow to almost red. Immature specimens lack the light gray underparts, instead having a light tan background adorned with large, brown, random vertical streaks. Mature specimens range from 13 to 17 inches in height, with a wingspan of roughly 3 feet. Behavior. Unlike most other species of raptor, this type can often be observed congregating in large groups of up to 20 individuals. This socialization occurs not only for nesting purposes, but for feeding objectives as well. This species consumes a tremendous amount of insects, particularly cicadas and grasshoppers, and it will pursue its prey communally while in flight. For me, it was, and incidentally still is, thrilling to watch several kites pursuing a fleeing cicada and knowing the chase is over by hearing the shrill sound of its prey as it is subdued. There are many reports of Mississippi kites trailing livestock for the purpose of finding food that the hooved mammals have stirred up. A monogamous pairing. This species of raptor pairs up while in the tropics during the breeding season, with the male and female remaining monogamous. The nest is constructed by both sexes and is formed out of sticks and lined with leaves and grass, as well as the occasional piece of litter. Oftentimes, this nest is built high in the tallest available trees, up to over 100 feet above the terrain. The female deposits the 1 to 3 whitish eggs that are then in turn incubated by both parents. The incubation period lasts approximately 1 month, and the nestlings remain in the nest, tended to by both parents, for another month. It is during this time that the adults will vigorously defend the nest from any creature that they deem as a threat by diving towards the perceived predator, only to veer away at the very last second. The size of the predator is irrelevant, and many adults will even dive at vehicles or lawnmowers. The Mississippi kite is a common bird whose population numbers appear to be on the rise. Look for this species in areas where large trees have been planted, especially municipal parks. But be warned, the calculated diving of a perturbed parent can be quite exhilarating. Here's the column by Allison Watkins. July is a great time to start planting these fall vegetables. Special to the San Angelo Standard Times, published July 18th. It's time to plant tomatoes. That may seem like the wrong timing, but July is a great time of year to plant fresh new tomato transplants for fall production. Other warm season vegetables such as eggplant, cucumber, okra, peppers, and squash can also be planted in July or August for a fall crop before it freezes in November. Tomatoes prefer cool weather, not freezing, but not in the 90s either. The flowers set fruit better in mild temperatures, especially larger varieties. Small cherry tomatoes can usually produce well all summer long, but larger varieties slow down or even stop altogether when it heats up. Many spring-planted plants start to get stressed from pests like spider mites in the summer. So if your plants aren't looking healthy, consider replacing them with new transplants. Fall is a wonderful time of year to grow vegetables. Choose large, healthy plants and encourage them to put on as much growth as possible in their first 2 months by irrigating steadily and fertilizing with nitrogen, but give them some time to establish before fertilizing. Nitrogen fertilizers can easily scorch or damage brand new transplants. July started out fairly cool and rainy, but when the heat returns, it will be stressful for the new plants. Keep a close eye on water needs and provide some shade in the afternoon for the first couple of weeks if needed. Incorporate compost into the soil before planting and finish off with a thick layer of wood mulch to help reduce transplant shock, conserve water, and prevent weeds. If growing in containers, use potting mix instead of real soil and make sure the container has good drainage. Standing water will damage roots and cause the plant to decline and can attract pests such as fungus gnats. Drip irrigation is the best way to irrigate vegetables since it applies the water directly to the soil for the roots to absorb instead of being splashed down on the leaves. It can be a pretty simple do-it-yourself project with a little practice. For tips, visit tomgreen.agrilife.org/horticulture and click on low volume irrigation. Wait to plant cool season crops like leafy greens, broccoli, carrots, and radishes. They should go in the ground starting in September or October when it cools down. Save the date for the Master Gardener's first ever fall vegetable plant sale, Saturday, September 25th from 8 a.m. to 12 p.m. They will have a variety of cool season vegetables available such as broccoli, spinach, lettuce, kale, cabbage, etc. Keep an eye out on their website, txmg.org/Concho Valley, for more info as it becomes available, or call the extension office at 325-659-6522. Allison Watkins is the Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Agent for Horticulture in Tom Green County. Contact her at aewatkins@ag.tamu.edu. San Angelo's performing arts scene offers something for everyone by Yukio Kuniyuki, San Angelo Performing Arts Center. Published July 2nd. If you love the performing arts as much as I do, then the last 2 weeks were amazing, especially after a year of shuttered venues and canceled shows. It was particularly impressive for me, as the new managing director at the San Angelo Performing Arts Center, to see our performing arts rebound with such vigor and witness the awesome support from our wonderful community. I kicked off my first week by getting tickets to Into the Woods Junior, presented by B Theater. It was the culmination of their annual summer camp at the Stevens Performing Arts Center in downtown San Angelo. In less than 2 weeks, their skilled instructors led a small platoon of students, 7 to 14 years old, through acting, choreography, and expertly singing the multitude of popular songs that from that Stephen Sondheim classic. It was no small feat and truly a joy to behold for my whole family. That same weekend, I participated in Sharing Dance Day with Ballet San Angelo as they hosted an afternoon lightsaber workshop and a Light Up the Night event to promote community health and wellness through movement. Their vibrant and energetic program, in coordination with the City of San Angelo, took center stage on the steps of City Hall with exhibition dances by the Dance Academy, Prep Academy, as well as BSA's own talented students and instructors. My wife and I also did a swing dance to represent B Theater and to get folks excited about social dancing again. Over 700 people attended this free event and got moving to the beat during the instructor-led classes and the fun choreographed flash mob. The evening culminated with a lightsaber performance and a stunning visual presentation projected onto City Hall, featuring animated renderings of dancers mapped onto the building's exterior. It was an exquisite composition that captivated everyone in attendance. This weekend, I attended San Angelo Broadway Academy's performance of Disney's Moana Jr. in the majestic Murphy Performance Hall. SABA's three-week camp led 90 students through complex choreography to put on five amazing shows over the weekend. This immersive production by SABA utilized state-of-the-art graphics projected onto the stage backdrop to bring storytelling to life. Being responsible for the Murphy, I had the privilege of seeing this performance come together backstage and from the audience, where I marveled at the exceptional talent we have in San Angelo. I also watched Smokey Joe's Cafe at Angelo Civic Theater, where their brilliant cast brought the showcase of 39 songs from the acclaimed Jerry Lieber and Mike Stoller to life in their historic theater. With over a month of rehearsals, the talented crew delivered a thoroughly entertaining production over three weekends to kick off ACT's ambitious season. It was an energetic and vocal tour de force by an incredible group of performers that got the audience up and dancing. For great music, I made it out to one of San Angelo Symphony's music and literature series performed at Old Town Books, where musicians read and played music to entertain young and old alike. There's nothing like the power of music to add the soundtrack to our lives, especially when performed by one of the symphony's many amazing musicians. Now we're just one short week away from a promising musical celebration at the River Stage to celebrate Independence Day. Brought to us by Downtown San Angelo, this event will feature the U.S. Air Force Band of the West, Mariachi Alma Mexicana, San Angelo Community Band, and the West Texas Jazz Orchestra. For those who can't make it out, the San Angelo Symphony will broadcast a newly recorded concert for all to enjoy. The last 2 weeks truly filled my heart with joy. We're blessed to have such an incredible depth of talent and so many dedicated performing arts organizations in our community. I look forward to seeing folks out at all the upcoming events. There will be more live performances, music, and dancing for all. Also, if you ever had a dream to be on stage, come out to one of the many auditions. There's room here for everyone. Together, we keep the performing arts alive. Yukio Kuniyuki is the managing director of the San Angelo Performing Arts Center, which comprises the Murphy Performance Hall and the Stevens Performing Arts Center that contains the Brooks and Bates Theater.
Thank you for joining us for this reading of the San Angelo Standard Times. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.